And there's another great boxing name here, and a fight card in Yorkshire, United Kingdom, not really worth talking about otherwise, but this guy's name is CJ Challenger. How about that? 5-0.
Nice.
Soon to be a champion, hopefully. He's fighting Gabor Omier, who is 4-21 with one draw. So maybe that's the mismatch of the week. Then we've got USA Fox Sports 1 card. By the way, I don't know if you guys heard, but the Fox, whole company, all of Fox, the 21st Century Fox, is being taken over by Disney now. Just got bought out. $54 billion worth of stock. And so apparently they're taking all the Fox Network stuff. Fox Sports 1, Fox Sports 2, the Fox News, all those are going to be spun off to an entirely new company, but it will be separate from the Disney parent company. So I think it's kind of like Disney owning ABC and ESPN. But ironically, ESPN was the one that was trying to get in on the UFC deal the last time. So now they'll probably get more UFC coverage anyway. I know the UFC's Fox deal is under reconsideration too, so who knows how that's going to work out. But pretty crazy stuff. We'll have to see if that gets if that has any effect on the sporting offerings. But anyway, the card on tomorrow night is going to feature Diego Gabriel Chavez, 26-2-1, versus Jamal James, who's 21-1. We also have John Molina Jr., 29-7, fighting Ivan Redcatch, who's got 20 wins, 3 losses, and 1 draw. We got Jesse.
That's a good fight.
Yeah, all of these are pretty decent matches. Jesse Vargas also on the card, 27-2, fighting Aaron Herrera, 33-7-1. Yeah, I actually got some video of him sparring at Floyd's gym there. Not sparring, but doing the mitts. Also, Wally Omotoso, 26-3, fighting Freddie Hernandez, who's 34-8. And I guess they're going to pick somebody out of the audience to fight Carlos Balderas, who's 2-0, because he's the only one on the card fighting TBA. And then we've got some fights in Austell, Georgia. It doesn't appear that they're being televised anywhere, but it's a pretty interesting main event. Tremaine Williams, undefeated at 13-0, fighting German Mraz, who's got a pretty wild record of 58 wins, 45 losses, and 2 draws. And Tom likes that. The other Tom likes that. I've been having to put my old cat in the litter box because he doesn't know how to get there anymore. When he starts meowing like that, I know he's got to piss. So we're going to have to deal with that background music for a little. Yeah, I had to invest in those puppy pee pads for him. That's what he sleeps on now. You hear him saying hello?
Tickle it.
There he goes. Hello.
Hello.
There he goes. He tries to do it better and better every time sometimes. It's funny.
Hello.
Hello. All right. While we're waiting for him to shut up, we'll try to talk over him a little bit. There's a guy over in the UK. And this is a pretty crazy story. His name is Kelvin Fawaz. And we know the UK has some issues with migration, just like we do with the ban, the Muslim ban, they call it. But this guy's from Nigeria. I don't think he is a practicing Muslim or anything, but... He's represented England 6 times international competition. He's currently London's middleweight boxing champion. He's been in the UK for 15 years since he was a kid. And he's a gifted amateur boxer. And Team Great Britain wanted him to represent Britain in the 2012 and 2016 Olympics, writing twice to the Home Office on his behalf. But despite his talent and service to England, he's been arrested and locked in an immigration detention center pending deportation to Nigeria, which is a country that said it won't allow him to live there because he's not even a citizen. And he doesn't know anybody there. He's never really had any connections there except for, you know, being born there. So it's a pretty crazy situation where, you know, he just got wrapped up in politics, basically. Once he first got to the UK, too, he was abandoned and forced into domestic slavery. So talk about a tough life. The Nigerian government rejected his applications for a passport, and he holds no other. And his application would be considered stateless. It's been rejected by the government. But his promoter and former boxing world champion Barry McGuigan said, Kelvin is a terrifically tremendous, talented young man who has helped my fighter Josh Taylor get ready for a couple fights. Kelvin has the capacity to go far. He's already brought glory to England many times and could go even further for this country if he was allowed by the Home Office to become a Team GB fighter as they want him to be. Kelvin's got a great personality. He ticks all the boxes. So pretty wild stuff. But we're hoping they sort that out and get him out of that jail. We talked about Orlando Salido ending his retirement. Tyson Fury, another great boxing name, one of Tony's favorites.
I was going to say, that's the greatest name for a fighter. Maybe not the greatest fighter, but man, he's got a great name for a fighter.
He has accepted a backdated 2-year doping ban. And I had not read this before, but, you know, him and his brother Huey got caught up in this doping situation, and they both had the same excuse. They said that they ate a wild boar that had not been castrated. That has got to be a new one. I'm not saying it doesn't sound feasible. I mean, actually, Orlando Salido, the guy we just talked about, said one time that the steaks that he was eating were from cows that had been injected with too many hormones. And that made some sense at the time. You know, it was a novel excuse, but made some sense. Now this is a wild animal, they say, just because it hadn't been castrated. They got the nandrolone in their system.
Well, you know, I told you guys a few years ago, I read a book about these, they call them travelers.
Right.
The Irish gypsies, and none of this would surprise me. I mean, they have a wild lifestyle. And speaking of that, I wonder if you guys, I guess this Billy Joe Sanders is a traveler, and I don't know if you guys see the Jeff Horn fight last night. You wanted to see that?
I did not.
Okay, it was kind of interesting. They cut it off in the 10th round. I thought that they were going to let it keep going, and there was about 20 minutes of ceremony into the hour, but I figured they'll let it keep going. Horn had a very tough time with it. I guess he was ahead on the scorecard getting out of this, but Horn did not look all that good. I think Terrence Crawford's looking chopped. But the point is, his opponent was this Corcoran guy, and he was another traveler. Now, you guys remember this whole thing about these travelers being in boxing? This seems to be a new thing. We've got Tyson Fury and his brother, Sanders. I didn't know he was identified with that tribe. Did you guys ever hear much about them before?
Well, I know.
I have not.
I know travelers are notorious for bare knuckle fighting.
Yeah.
And when we talked to Bobby Gunn, I think he was talking about some aspects of that too, and he was trying to get a fight with one of those guys over there that you know, claimed to be undefeated and all that. So I'm familiar with that aspect of it, but I really had no idea that Tyson Fury was one, and that they were entering boxing at such a fast rate.
Apparently they call themselves gypsies.
Yeah.
But they're not those Roma gypsies. They're white gypsies, Irish gypsies, and they seem controversial.
Right.
Apparently, this Sanders doesn't have a lot of fans from the UK, from what I'm reading about this. LaRue's claiming he's getting all kinds of letters saying, shut this guy up. We'll get on that.
Right.
No, I just wondered, because I don't remember ever hearing about this traveling thing, and all of a sudden they seem to be popping up more often.
And actually, Billy Joe Saunders, right? Is that what you're talking about?
Right.
Yeah, he's got to fight this weekend, I think.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. These travelers are kind of like, they almost seem like they're pro wrestling villains in a light way, you know?
Yeah.
They're very colorful, but they seem to have a lot of controversy. Nice period. Just, you know, one way or the other, love him or hate him, you know. It was just strange. I just noticed that last night with this Jeff Horn thing, when this Horn guy that was fighting him said, Horn gets dirty, I'm going to bite him. this biting thing. Well, Phil Tony in on that as we come to the UFC event. But, yeah, I guess these travelers, just hearing more about him all of a sudden.
Yeah, he's fighting David Lemieux this weekend on Saturday.
Real grudge fight. A lot of trash talk. Who says he really wants to hurt him?
And good thing, well, there's our transition to Manny Pacquiao, too. Jeff Horn and Manny Pacquiao obviously had their controversial fight. But now Manny Pacquiao is aiming for a fight in April. And it appears that he's getting himself in a little trouble because he publicly stated that he's talked to Conor McGregor. And we've obviously heard this, you know, theory before that those two might fight. But the aspect of Manny actually talking to Conor without the UFC or Dana White being involved officially in the conversation is actually technically... you could look at it as a actionable offense legally. So Dana White has actually said, if this is true, I'm going to sue Manny Pacquiao, which probably won't end up well for the fight prospects. But they have said they've talked, and obviously it doesn't appear that Conor's going back to MMA anytime soon. So it's just one of those interesting stories that's been going around this week. And actually, I was listening to Chael Sonnen's podcast about this, and he really seriously thinks Dana White should sue. I think he's just, just kind of trying to get himself into the picture in the discussion. But if they just talked about it, I don't really see that's breaking the law unless they actually had negotiations about it. But anyway.
What law? What law are we talking about here?
I don't know. The Muhammad Ali Act, I guess? I don't know. Something. There's some kind of clause in contracts with the UFC, especially, that prevents these guys from organizing their own fights or, you know, talking as a manager.
Okay, well, Pacquiao's not in the UFC. What gives Dana the jurisdiction to tell him what to do? I think he's going to sue anyway, sue Conor, wouldn't he?
Good point. I don't know.
Maybe something's going over my head here. I seem to be missing the whole thing. Dana's going to sue Manny Pacquiao.
Well, it would be like the civil claim of interference with contract or something like that. So he's basically trying to set up a fight with a guy who's under contract. And under that contract, all fights are supposed to be set up by his promoter. So if somebody else comes in knowing about this contract and tries to talk to this guy, then they could technically sue him. I mean, it would be a long shot either way for just one phone call. But, especially where Conor probably wouldn't be volunteering everything that was said. And Manny Pacquiao pretty much just said it was a quick call. So I doubt there actually will be a suit. But I think Dana White's just basically saying that so that he can bring the two to the table if that's what they really want to do. But it would be in April, I guess, that Manny's fighting next.
Try to get like a,
go ahead.
I'm trying to get like a cease and desist
motion. Something. I don't know. But, and then, of course, Floyd Mayweather is making news for some other things. He has said publicly now that the UFC approached him about a comeback, and not to boxing, to the UFC. And I said this myself, that what a badass he would look like if he took Conor McGregor on in the cage after this. Even if he loses, you know, and he's got nothing to lose there because, you know, you get your ass kicked in the octagon, you got a big excuse. Well, it's my first fight. Just like Conor looked great in his loss in his first boxing match. But Floyd is really smoking something when he's talking about making $1 billion in three or four fight deal in the octagon. He's saying he can make $1 billion.
Yeah. Not a
right? Does he know what sport and what organization he's talking about? Here's his exact quote, you know, if you really want to get your dose of Money Mayweather here. He says, you already know I'm a money-getting motherfucker. I'm Money May. They just called me not too long ago and asked me to come back. I can come right back to the UFC. If I want, I can go. I can come right back to the UFC. I can go fight in the octagon. I can do a 3 or 4 fight deal in the octagon and make $1 billion. Remember, I'm Floyd Money Mayweather, and you motherfuckers love me, and I love you motherfuckers. So, I don't know. But, yeah, that just sounds pretty far-fetched. And I love the way he says back to the UFC, like he's been there before. Just because he fought under a co-promotion in the boxing match. Gonna come back. I don't know. I think he's all talk there, but, you know, if they do somehow come up with that kind of money to get him in there, I would love to see it. Because I think he would underestimate it just as bad as Conor underestimated boxing.
I just don't think we'll see that. I think Mayweather's ego's too big.
Yeah. I don't know. Money talks, they say, but we'll see. And, of course, we've got to get to the mixed martial arts. We've had the boxing hour here. We got MMA to cover here. We had a big match this last weekend. We had competing fights, as we said, boxing, Bellator, and UFC all in the same night. And UFC Fight Night 123 featured the main event of Cub Swanson versus Brian Ortega. A lot of big news going into this one about how Swanson was taking a new approach to the sport. He's got a new baby daughter, and he's just really taking his career more seriously, training like an animal. And then at the same time, this Brian Ortega is coming in undefeated, looking better than ever. And he went right by the book of his career. He's had a lot of early difficulty, but then just come back and made some kind of change and made some adjustments and been able to win these fights that he's had some struggles in. But this one was just a total surprise. I mean, he was really not doing that good at all. Cub Swanson was beating the pants off of him.
Cub won the first round easy. I had him winning the second round. But Ortega is just, his MMA jiu-jitsu may be better than Damian Maia. I'm not saying he's right there. It's unbelievable what that guy can do.
And it was a guillotine choke submission. He actually had the choke, and then he kept pushing his foot off the cage to tighten it and readjust it. And so he secured it and got the tap out. And also, oh, this is crazy. Oh, that's, I'm looking at Cub Swanson's record. I'm like wondering why there's no opponents listed. So, the rest of the card, we had Gabriel Benitez in the co-main event, beating Jason Knight by unanimous decision.
Bite. Yeah, Tony, there was a bite attack.
Yeah, there's another bite in that bite.
Jason Knight was auditioning for the role of Mo Howard. I mean, he not only bit his opponent, but then he gave him the Three Stooges, Stooge Foo eye poke. Yeah, that was
a cultural icon.
Yeah, I mean, it's not comfortable, it's too true. But, Rich, did you see that fight?
I did. I remember the bite, and it was on the finger, supposedly. And it was funny because they took a point off right away. I mean, it's pretty blatant, especially if it's on purpose. But well, Jason, like, points to his mouth and is, like, trying to say it was an accident. Like, come on.
Yeah. Well, Benitez started screaming, and I thought, well, I didn't know what it was, but he was screaming, bite. I mean, this goes back to UFC 3, you know, some of those we had fights in ages. That was a very bad night for Jason Knight. I think a complete mental breakdown. By the third round, his strategy had just evaporated.
And that was quite bizarre. That Benitez got the unanimous decision win.
Good for him. You know, I hope we can get him as a guest on sometime. He really kept his voice, which would be challenging to do when you get your hand dead. I mean, now he probably had to get shots.
I don't think it broke the skin. Shots. Like Jason has rabies.
Gotta go get rabies. Jason and I may have been rabbits, you know?
Yeah.
Then he gets poked in the eye. I mean, God. But he really impressed me, though. The way he kept himself together. Good for him.
And an absolutely horrendous, brutal knockout of Aljamain Sterling in the fight before that. Marlon Moraes came in with a knee that was meant to be a kick. Aljamain went to shoot for a takedown and took it off the temple. It was vicious. The way he fell to the ground and the way he was out so long, it was scary.
The knee from hell. That's why a head-on collision so bad in cars, because you've got accelerating forces in the opposite direction.
And Marlon was very classy about it.
I
thought he showed great poise by saying, you know, I don't ever want to see my opponent hurt, and, kind of showing him some deference there. We also had a bunch of other unanimous decisions in the fights before that. Scott Holtzman over Daryl Horcher. Eric Anders versus Marcus Perez. Holtzman won there, and Eric Anders won there. And then Benito Lopez won over Albert Morales, also by unanimous decision. And we had a split decision in the Alexis Davis versus Liz Carmouche fight. I thought that one really could have gone either way. By the way, that was the refereeing debut on this card of Frank Trigg. He did that fight too. We interviewed Frank Trigg years ago, like back when I first started. He actually sent me some of his clothing line, the Trigonometry clothing line. I don't think I still have it, but that's how long ago it was. We also had Andre Sukumthoth beating Luke Sanders by TKO in the second round. Alex Perez beat Carlos John de Thomas by Anaconda choke in the second round, 154 into that one. Frankie Sands beat Marab Devalishvili by split decision. Alejandro Perez beat Yuri Alcantara by unanimous decision. And second fight of the night, Davi Ramos beat Chris Rutzmacher by rear naked choke, just 50 seconds into the third. And Trevin Giles in the first fight of the night beat Antonio Braga Neto by knockout, 227 into the third. And we got some fights this weekend we'll talk about in a minute. Carvalho versus Sakara. This was a very small Bellator card. Just five fights, and I think they only showed two of them on TV. Two or three. I might have missed one, but it was basically Brandon Gertz versus Luka Jelcic was the co-main event. That was
what a surprise that was.
Yeah, that was a vicious knockout too.
Yeah, and if you look at him, I mean, you look at the size disadvantage. I mean, it was more height, it wasn't weight, but Gertz showed it didn't matter.
Yeah, and he wasn't looking good early either. It's just out of nowhere, got the knockout there. 1 minute and 57 seconds into the fight. And it was even quicker in the main event. Rafael Carvalho comes into Sakara's backyard. Alessio Sakara coming in at 19-12. Carvalho at 15-1. And Carvalho got the knockout from an elbow from hell. And Also on that card, Alejandra Lara beating Lena Ovchinnikova by rear naked choke. That one went into the third round, 4 minutes and 9 seconds in. And then the only decision of the night was Carlos Leo Miranda beating Mihail Nika by unanimous decision. In the first fight of the night, Gregory Babin beat Tony Zenko by armbar submission. And I'm sure there was some great kickboxing on, but I didn't get to watch that. I forget whether I was watching the boxing or what happened, but I didn't get to watch all the kickboxing. Did you get to see that, Tom?
Yeah, I watched John Wayne Parr. What a cool name for a fighter, huh? Yeah, he's 41. The guy's been around forever, but he still got it. He's knocked out his opponent.
Nice.
And Joe Schilling was taking the distance. And he's always entertaining.
Yeah, actually, the there was a post I saw about Joe trying to intervene with that kid with the viral video about bullying. And he called up the mother, Joe Schilling, and offered to bring the kid out to his training facility and, you know, have him spend a day with all the fighters out there. And apparently, from his perspective, even though a lot of these posts and videos that he put out were deleted, he claimed that the mother only wanted money for her GoFundMe account. And she wanted nothing to do with anything else. And she basically explained that, oh, I'm a single mother, so I need the money. So they basically, a lot of people started accusing her of taking advantage of the situation for her own financial benefit. Now, she came back and claimed that none of those GoFundMe pages were started by her. She had nothing to do with it. It's, you know, somebody else that did it and was going to donate the money. But just seems awful shady. And then on top of that, I guess there was some stuff on her Facebook page that could be considered racist. There was the standing by the Confederate flag and some comments about some black protesters that she supposedly put on there. So it was kind of crazy.
Let's back up a second. Now, her son's being bullied and she needs money.
Right?
I'm not getting this. What's the thing?
Yeah, I don't get it either. I guess, you know, she got to buy him presents, so he doesn't feel bad.
I mean, and here, a world-class fighter. Look, I don't know if he's done any boxing, but I know he's mainly a kickboxer, but he's done MMA. But regardless, he offers to work with this young kid, right? And the mom says, no, I just need money. My son's being bullied. I don't know. This is a different world we're living in now.
Right.
In my younger days, that's for sure. Just by really not seeing the connection. But what do I know?
So, we hope all that gets sorted out. I did hear, too, that some people were claiming that there were some people out there pretending to be her. And it could have been that, you know, pretender who he was talking to online or over the phone. Who knows? But if that really was her, that is pretty despicable. It's almost like those people that claim to have cancer and take all kinds of donations, and then you find out they're perfectly healthy.
Well, okay, but this seems different, because if you're giving to someone with cancer, maybe they would have legitimate bills.
Expenses, yeah.
But in this case, the kid's being bullied, and she wants to get paid for it?
Yeah.
Well, I'm really not. I'd like to see the sales pitch for that one. What do you think your money's going to do to help this kid if he is being bullied?
Yeah. Anyway, we got some more events coming up this weekend. Apparently, Bellator is in the mood to compete with the UFC. They're doing all kinds of stuff on the same day. Now, this one is usually Bellator does not delay, or, you know, well, they do delay it, but they don't change the time of their card. So it's usually always 9 o'clock, no matter where it is in the world. Just like the other night with the one in Italy. But this is Bellator 191 coming to us from Newcastle, Tyne and Wear, England. And it's Michael McDonald and Peter Laguerre in the main event. McDonald is 17-4. Laguerre is 8-1-1. And the co-main event here is Valerie Letourneau, 8-6, versus Kate Jackson, 9-2-1. And the guy that Kimbo popped his cauliflower ears also on the card. James Colossus Thompson, 20-16, fighting Philip DeFries, 13-6. And that was actually the rematch that Kimbo was supposed to be fighting before he died of heart failure. But that never got made. So this will be the first time we've seen James Thompson on the Bellator card in a long time. Also, Muhammad Yahya, 4-1, fighting Ash Griffiths, 4-4. Muhammad Yahya, I said. Jeremy Petley is on the card in the first fight. He's 11-8-1, fighting Lewis Monarch, who is 9-2. And it's another short card for Bellator. That's it. So I don't know if they like to bring less people overseas or what. But it's pretty thin. And then we got the big one, UFC on Fox 26. Rafael Dos Anjos versus Robbie Lawler. And of course, Lawler's been out a long time. He had that crazy battle with the other McDonald. And he's had some issues with concussions. He took a lot of time off to deal with that. And now he's facing one of the best guys in the division, Rafael Dos Anjos, who's had some ups and downs. He was looking unstoppable at one point. He had a bad ankle injury at one point. He had to pull out of a fight. And he's just been very unpredictable as far as, you know, which guy is going to show up. So I think Lawler's got a great chance to win this one if he plays it smart. But Dos Anjos really has to prove something that shows some consistency here to get this win.
Yeah, and you remember, Dos Anjos is coming up in weight, and Lawler's fought in middleweight before. So Lawler should have a power advantage. I think Dos Anjos is just going to have to use his speed. He's really got to fight smart. But it's intriguing. See how he'll do. Winner of this is right back in the mix.
Yep. And some pretty impressive records on this card and matchups for a free fight. This one is actually from another country too, Manitoba, Canada. And we'll get to some more Canadian news in a minute. The co-main event here is Ricardo Lamas, 18-5, fighting Josh Emmett, 12-1. And Lamas is definitely in that title picture. So if he gets a win here, he's looking at a potential title shot or maybe a contender fight to determine who fights for the title next. But it's definitely somebody that's up in there. Santiago Ponzinibbio on the card. He's 25-3, fighting Mike Perry, who's 11-1. And
That's one of those don't blink. Because the scheme of Santiago did to Gunnar Nelson, which is really spicy.
Yeah.
Santiago was one hell of a punch. What did he say in the road to the octagon, like the countdown? He says, my opponents, they'll charge me when they feel my power. My Perry will be charging.
And Glover Teixeira on the card. He's 26-6, fighting Misha Surkunov, 13-3. And eighth fight of the night is Jan Blachowicz, who is 20 wins, 7 losses, fighting Jared Cannonier, who is 10-2. We also have Darren Stewart, 7-2, fighting Julian Marquez, who's 6-1. Chad LaPrize, 12-2, fighting Galore Bofondo, who's 5-2. Tim Elliott, coming in at 14-8-1, fighting Pietro Menga, who's undefeated at 13-0. And fourth fight of the night is Abel Trujillo, 15-7, fighting John McDessie, 14-6. Third fight, Alessio De Chirico, 10-2, fighting Oluwole Bamgbosi, who is 6-3. And second fight of the night, Jordan Main, 29-12, fighting Eric Silva, 19-8. The first fight of the night, Nordine Taleb, 13-4, fighting Danny Roberts, who's 14-2. So that about does it for upcoming stuff. Now let's get to the other news tidbits. Talked about Teddy Atlas, Pacquiao. Tyson Fury. Eric Skoglund is still in a coma after surgery on a brain injury he suffered in sparring. Now, this guy was just competing in the World Boxing Super Series. Now he might never box again. He just went under, had just recently, over the weekend, I believe, underwent an operation in Sweden after falling ill at the end of a training session. Specialist placed him in a medically induced coma and say the next week or so will be vital to see if he recovers from the injury. Doctors are pleased with the results. He's in serious but stable condition. So we're pulling for him. Hopefully he pulls out of it. And we'll keep checking on that one. But that was just sparring, you know. Just shows you how tough the sport is. Now, Edmonton, up in Canada, is in the news because they have placed a one-year moratorium on all new licenses or event permits for combative sports. And of course, that's made some people mad. KO Boxing promoter Mel Lubavac said it's absolute bullshit, so he's obviously not happy. He says, they didn't discuss anything with us. This doesn't just affect my show. It affects all fighters. And,
So there will be no professional boxing or MMA in Canada for a year?
In Edmonton.
Oh, Edmonton. Oh, just that province.
Right. And this is all because of the Tim Hague situation. 34 years old, he died after a sanctioned boxing match against former Edmonton Eskimo Adam Braidwood back on June 16th of this year. And they basically are I think it was supposed to be tomorrow. There was supposed to be another fight, Unified MMA 33. That was the first fight to be impacted by this. They did allow one fight last Friday night at the Shaw Conference Center, KO Boxing 81. That was the last one. And retired.
I don't know what the legal system. It sounds like there should be some legal action, but I don't know. Canada may have a whole different system.
Yeah. Retired former UFC fighter Mitch Clark also weighed in on the decision. He said it's garbage and a knee-jerk reaction by the mayor and council, and this is going to do more harm than good. I think that people need to speak up and say something because we're going to lose combat sports in Edmonton, and we used to be a hotbed for mixed martial arts and boxing in this city. And this moratorium vote was added to the agenda for the City Council Friday after a verbal update on the status of this independent third-party review into Hague's death. And that final report is supposed to be released to the public today. So I'll have to check out to see if that has happened, but I haven't read anything yet on that. Rob Smith, the deputy city manager of Citizen Services, said in a news release that the report would allow, quote, continued conversation about the proper role of the municipality in the field of combative sports, unquote. And the Edmonton Combative Sports Commission also issued a statement saying it will continue our work as a commission, using this time to move forward with the comprehensive policy review that had already been underway. But the thing is, I think this has more to do with the promoters than anything, and the promoters of this particular fight. Rather than punish all of combative sports, you need to look at those promoters and find out why they put Tim Hague in this fight, because they're saying that Hague suffered 3 knockouts within 9 months before this match against Braidwood. And he probably shouldn't have even been allowed to go into that fight, considering that. And you know.
Well, and not just the promoters, but what about the commission?
Right. Actually, Braidwood fought on that last card too in Edmonton, and another woman fighter, Jelena Mirjanovic, is a pretty famous fighter from up there, and she came into the ring at that match to denounce this decision by the city. another guy who promotes fights up there saying that this is going to push these fights underground, which could be even more dangerous. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. And see where that goes. All right. So I think that about does it for us, unless you guys have anything else to add before we go.
No, I'm pretty good. I mean, you know, we got a lot of fights we got to watch last week and discuss and controversy. When we box, we got controversy.
Yeah.
Oh, and then how about the boxing Friday night down in Miami?
One
of you guys see any of that?
No.
No, I didn't get home till late Friday night.
Well,
what did we miss, Tom?
Luis Ortiz has talked himself into a fight with Deontay Wilder.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I did hear about that. I heard, you know, he's put an impressive knockout, and they said it was heart blood pressure medication. They caused his positive drug test. I don't know. But we'll see, right?
Well, the guy in the Ortiz spot was, you know, I mean, he got in there and did the best he could, but it was one of those, he was, you know, they're an opponent type. And the talk got pretty nasty. Well, it's okay, let's go. And then the main event, Pascal, John Pascal, that right, would be his last fight. And he was having kind of a rough time about with this Albiali, and then Albiali had this girl hurt, but he started to run out of gas, and then as he was coming out for the seventh round, the bell rang, and I think all of us know, when you're in a fight and when that bell rings, you better be thinking of one thing, your opponent.
Yeah.
Albiali had his back turned after the bell rang, saying something trainer or his manager, and I'm thinking, well, what the hell are you discussing? You know, what the weather's like in Miami, or, you know, where are we going for dinner after the fight? Come on! And I knew that was the end of him. You know, then he wound up quitting about a minute later. But, yeah, interesting. So Wilder's got his next opponent, it looks like. King Kong Ortiz.
And Tony, before we go, I've got to ask you, how good is the Philadelphia Eagles backup quarterback? I want to know if I should pick him this week in FanDuel.
Well, you know what? They are playing the Giants, who's a struggling team. The one, Nick Foles was a Pro Bowler in 2013. You know, that year he came in and replaced Michael Vick, and he went on to pass for 27 touchdowns and 2 interceptions.
Wow.
That's not bad. And, you know, he led them down the stretch. He took them to a home playoff game. He drove them down the field and took the lead with a couple minutes to go, and then the defense crashed. And that's why they lost. The next year, he was doing well again until he broke his collarbone and was out for the season. And then the following year, that idiot Chip Kelly traded him. And then he struggled on a very bad St. Louis team. But Nick Foles is a good quarterback. He knows the system. He knows Doug Peterson. And he has weapons in Philadelphia. The only thing I would caution against is Philadelphia is a very well-rounded team. So I think Doug Peterson is going to employ a heavy rushing attack, because he's got 3 very talented running backs and a powerful right side of his offensive line. The left side's a little bit of a struggle, but a powerful right side, and he may, you know, try to run, and then maybe then set up some passes. But for a guy that stepped in with basically no playing time this year, he drove them down, drove them down for the go-ahead score, and then made a couple crucial passes when they were trying to get them first down to ice the game.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite games of this whole year. You know, it's just a slugfest.
Oh, it was a good game.
From whistle to whistle.
Know, franchise quarterback went down.
Yeah, that's bad. Well, if you're going to go down, though, you might as well go down that way, scoring a touchdown, right?
Yeah, true, but he could come back home.
Yeah, that sucked.
A gated touchdown, even worse.
Yeah.
But if I can win my fantasy matchup this week, I'm a 20-point underdog, but if I can win, that'll put me in the finals in a guaranteed $300.
Oh, there you go.
And then if I can win the finals, I would get $900.
Yeah, I'm trying to hit the big jackpot on FanDuel. I've been reading up on it, and I've been playing it all wrong, apparently, because the sole idea that you need to think about, and the reason why they had such controversy with the DraftKings guys winning on FanDuel, was because they had got the percentage of ownership figures. And it's all about that. I mean, a lot of people think, oh, you just got to pick the guys that are most likely to score. Well, you also have to think about who is not going to get picked that's going to have the great score, because a lot of people are going to pick the same old guys, and you're going to have a lot of ties, or you're just going to have a lot of people with the same score. And if you have a lesser owned team, like, you know, 2 or 3%, like actually probably the biggest under the radar guy last week was from the Panthers, D'Angelo, I think that's what I said.
Getting pissed off at Cam Newton, and you know, they get running the ball, and I'm like, you stop running the damn ball?
Yeah. So, yeah, it's all about the percentage of ownership sometimes. So, if I can win big there, I think we'll have a new podcast set up anyway. Might be able to get paid for this. So, wish us luck anyway. All right, folks, that's it for tonight. Thanks for stopping by, and we'll be back next week. We're working on Eddie Chambers for next week, a Philadelphia boxing legend. Been around a long time. So.
Yeah, I have the distinction of having him seen fight at the Blue Horizon.
Nice. So hopefully we can get him. He seems agreeable to the idea.
Cool.
We'll work on that, and then we'll go from there. Have a great night.
All right, gentlemen. Always.
Adios.